Welcome to the newest episode of the R-Beats Original Podcast, where we dive into hashtag local music somewhere and current topics interesting to any kind of creative mind listening.
Okay, so today we are here and we are being brought to you by rbeatsradio.com. And we are here to discuss some raw facts and fiction and realities and worldviews on some of the new technology coming out and how it relates to us as just normal people in society and professionals. Hope you guys enjoy. And if you have any comments or thoughts or interests, drop a comment below. So with me today is, my name is Wendy Kahn, and I have John Kassan hosting We Talk Raw.
It sounds worse than it really is. There's nothing, your kids can listen to this. It's total, there's nothing raw other than just, we're just live.
Yeah. When we say raw, I mean, depending upon where you want to go with that statement, what we mean is we get down to the nuts and bolts of the conversation. And I like to call it laid back by the layman.
Laid back by the layman.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody's not a chat GPT, but damn, are they, it as sure is fun, and it makes us a lot smarter. But there's a reality that sets in that of normal life people. And I think it's important to understand worldview from worldly people and from people that are just normal and laymans and professionals and all of the above. So that's what our house is. It's a filtering system of information through us that we can bring to you. In a very real, raw fashion.
I always make the assumption that most people are smarter than me. And so if you're listening, you're probably one of those people. And if you're not, you're probably not that smart. But people interacting, people calling, people commenting, that's what makes the show good. So if nobody does that today, the show won't be good. But you can listen anyway and just know that you're person that's somewhat responsible for not making the show good because you didn't call, text, or add anything to the show, if that makes any sense.
So with that, I'd like to introduce a couple of guests that we have with us today. One being Jessica Drake. And she is a... We're going to let her introduce herself and what she does and who she is and what her... purpose in life is and what her superpowers are. And I think we'll go around the room and kind of ask everybody the same question just so people can get to know us.
God, I couldn't
What's your purpose? Oh, what's your superpower?
What's my purpose in life?
What's my purpose in life? I don't know. So I'm Jessica Drake Mosier, and I am a songwriter, musician. I have been writing and singing and playing for a long, long time. And I started a music school in North Carolina about 7 years ago, and my mission in life is to be as creative as I can without getting in my own way, if that makes any sense in this world. So, and staying optimistic. So we're all here today, and we're going to be talking about... And
okay, let's introduce Chelsea. Walsh.
Oh, yes. Hello, hello.
And Chelsea has mega purpose and superpowers. I can acclaim to that. And I know one of her superpowers is she is very good at podcasting and interviewing people.
Oh, thank you.
And she does a lot of things in different realms with interior design as well as crafts and things like that, and does phenomenal work with her crafts.
Thank
so
you.
I'll let you have it from here, Chelsea.
Okay, thank you. Do you want me to go on about this AI thing?
Well, tell us about who you. Tell us a little bit about your purpose and your superpower.
Sure. So I think my purpose here is, I think I was put on Earth to organize, to be honest. Actually, I had, no, I kid you not, I had a psychic reading. I kid you not. And actually, she was I can't think of what it's called right now, a spiritual guide. Mm-hmm. And my spiritual guide's name is Artrosa. I could go into this, but anyways, she did tell me. Yeah, it was like a 90-minute session, and she told me literally there was a little clock, like a clock that you wear around your, you know, neck.
Like Flavor Flav.
Yeah, exactly. But she was like, "You were put on Earth to organize. Like this, like you're just an organized soul. So my purpose in life, I think God put me here to organize lives, and I enjoy it. I actually really do enjoy it.
Now,
it is very Lutheran. Mm-hmm. I'm from Minnesota, if anybody is curious about that. So we have a lot of Lutherans up there. I would say my superpower then parlays into I'm an organizer. And I'm a creative. Like I do some stuff for Arbeats Kids, leading kids in crafts and interviewing.
And I'll add to that, if you want to find Chelsea Walsh, you can find her at RBTZTV Originals.
Yes. Yep. I've done a few projects here. So, okay. So let's go dive into the AI situation. There is a Scarlett Johansson bot. And it's basically, she looks just like Scarlett Johansson. Does she not?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how Scarlett Johansson feels
about this, right?
She's probably had to sell the rights to it. She probably gets paid for that. Every time somebody buys her bot, she gets paid. I would think.
Interesting.
Gets like a kickback or a residual, would you think?
I would be surprised if she even gave permission in the first place.
But did you give your permission every time we send off for our DNA to be sent off and researched so that we can, you know, in our minds, oh, I want to know my history. But are we signing our DNA away?
Well, no. So I guess.
You know what I mean? And then they can take that DNA and create bots out of it.
So she created her own bot.
No, it says Ricky Ma had created a bot that looked eerily like the Lost in Transition translation, I'm sorry,
love
actress. Yes, but he won't admit it's actually based on her. So he will not, probably for the like a lawsuit type thing, make it, you know, she does look eerily like her though. I will say that.
Wow. Wow, that's not cool. You can't make it look like her and then not, you know, hook her up. I mean, she's paid her dues. I mean, even if she didn't, I don't think that's fair to people.
Even to have a bot in your likeness out there. I right. feel like would be a little bit, I mean, a lot of it invasive.
Talk
right?
about a doppelganger.
I know.
Yeah.
That is so weird.
There'll be doppelganger noids. Ganganoids.
It looks like he's created quite a few of these bots.
The name of the creator?
Yeah, let's check this out. Okay, everybody, here's where you go to find this. Where do you go to find it, Chelsea?
Okay, his name is Ricky, R-I-C-K-Y. Ma, M-A. Now, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but...
Is he from Japan?
He's Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
Based designer. And he's a quiet man.
Okay.
I don't know.
Ricky Ma.
But he has... I don't...
So he's been doing this for a while. So I'm reading an article from 2018, and they say 3 years ago, he created a bot.
His robot winks and smiles. When he tells them that they're beautiful, they wink and smile.
Yeah, well, Harmony can be your assistant.
Yeah, that's true.
Scarlett, you got a ways to go, girl. You know, I think one of the really fascinating things about this with these humanoid bots is the way that they create the skin.
So it's a physical thing. It's a physical.
Is the skin rubber? Because I feel like it would be rubber.
They're refining the process to make it like human-like. And with some of them, they heat up.
I was going to say, I was literally just going to ask, do they sweat? I'm wondering, like, is there moisture produced in this?
They have a sweat bot. There is a sweat bot.
Well, I mean, if you're going to use one as a sex tool, you would think you would need some lubrication. Maybe it's self-lubricating.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry we're going there, but it's my thought.
Make it rain.
Does anybody else think of this stuff? I mean, my brain can go there.
We did, but you brought it up.
Yeah. I was the one to say
it. We were talking about the first iteration of something like that with the real dolls that were out many years ago. And then the temperature, you would have to put them in the bathtub to heat up the body temperature.
And that was a sex doll?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's actually a movie called Lars and the Real Girl that kind of plays on like... You know, a lonely guy that's, you know, wanting companionship, and he gets a real doll, and the movie goes kind of from there. But,
I have a screenplay that I was looking at writing about that. But it was it was about a couple that's been married 20 years, and their good friends sent them a cat bot as a joke, and it destroyed their marriage.
Interesting. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. Okay, so check this out. Okay, everybody, here's a place to go. Look up KENGORO, the robot that sweats. Kangaroo.
Why do you want a robot that sweats?
Well, we're talking about, like, if you can get that feature built in. Right now, they're refining the process and you know, getting it to where they probably could stick it on the girl and, you know, wherever they, as for the male and the female. A freaky humanoid robot that sweats as it does push-ups.
Yeah. Hmm. Human-inspired, more than 100 motors.
100 motors to make this thing sweat?
Mm, yep. He can sweat.
Interesting. Sweat bot.
It was developed by researchers at the University of Tokyo.
Oh, he looks like the Terminator.
Yeah.
He doesn't have skin on him yet. Yeah, no, I think these other ones look no like skin. That, but they have skin on them.
No, he really does look like the Terminator a little bit. With a smiling face. It's interesting. The dichotomy between his smiling face and his sweaty, porous, robotic arms and legs.
So it says that it was created of a plastic that can absorb water, and it circulates like through this like a porous aluminum.
I wonder if it...
And then it heats into a vapor. And then the little small fans blow the body. They have little inside the body that allows the kangaroo to cool itself, similar to sweating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I wonder if it just sweats in its armpits and groin, and you know what I mean, or is it coming out of like its hands?
Does it need Lumi?
No, either. Yeah,
ordered some Lumi.
That's some free ads right there. For those of you that don't know what Lumi is, it's a deodorant for all parts of your body, from my understanding.
Have y'all seen the Lumi? Have you actually watched her video?
No, I've not.
Let's watch it really quick. I think that Lumi would be fun. Video? Yeah, the Lumi video. Let's give her some love. Now, this is like, she was a OBGYN, this doctor that created this product. And when she, think about how many areas, we'll call them, that she's been in.
Oh, I'm sure.
In her career. Mm-hmm. And I think it just finally she had enough. That's the way I take it. So if you look up Lumi and look at the video, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Shannon Kligman is her name.
She's awesome. I love her.
It's interesting that you apply it like a lotion. I like, oh, wow.
Watch her video and how she describes the whole thing is. Did you find it?
Well, I'm watching this.
Watch this one. This is going to freak you out. This is absolutely fantastic.
Hi, oh, wow. That's,
We're talking armpits, lady bits, under the testicles, the chesticles, the butt cracks, and sweaty backs.
Jesus.
So why am I hanging out between these stirrups? This is where Lumi was born. As a woman, I have spent my fair share of time in this seat, self-conscious about my bottom half draft, also my feet. And as an OBGYN, I've seen countless patients who've been over-diagnosed for odor below the belt.
It's your vagina's fault.
Oh. Antibiotics are often over-prescribed whenever there's a concern about odor. I knew this never-ending vagina blame game was lazy, and much more often than not, wrong. So I started to think outside the box. And worked my smelly butt off to prove that the problem wasn't in the vagina. It's on the skin. And it's everywhere. It's bacteria.
Bacteria was my father. Call me Carl.
Kind of cute for a sweat, blood, and semen-eating organism. You see, depending on the fluids Carl eats from your below-the-belt buffet...
sweat cargo.
Different odors emerge. So it's not even really you that smells. It's Carl. Lumi attacks odor at the source, stopping Carl from eating in the first place.
Hey, Lumi.
Hey, Carl. What's up?
Okay.
Just click the link to slay your stink forever. Lumi is the world's first whole-body deodorant, stopping BO before it even happens. 72 hours stink-free everywhere on your body is big deodorant's worst nightmare. You see, most big brands want to bully you into trying a bunch of different products that will only cover up Carl for a few hours. So you have to keep buying and applying, and I've never liked bullies. The world deserved a better, different deodorant. One for all. It took me 10 years to perfect Lumi. And after all the blood, sweat, stink, and tears...
Yum! Got any poop?
We proved Lumi was 6 times more effective than other leading natural deodorants.
Oh my God.
Lumi is aluminum-free, baking soda-free, and hypoallergenic. So you can use it on your most sensitive skin. From the pits to the balls of your feet. Rather than just trying to cover up odor with aggressive scents, Lumi smells like a brief, fleeting whiff of science. And then nothing at all, like the back of your hand. We have tens of thousands of 5-star reviews and a 60-day money-back guarantee because we expect you to expect more. Now that's confidence. So click the link to enjoy a world without body stink with Lumi, the better, different, everywhere deodorant.
So does it, what does it do? Just take away the smell?
Take a pea-sized amount and apply it like lotion to your privates. Then kiss your stinky butt goodbye.
That's how it works, I guess.
Because to me, your an odor is your body trying to tell you that something needs to be cleaned, not covered up.
Well, you know, here's my take on the whole thing. It's dead skin.
Yeah.
If you have dead skin on your body and water gets into the dead skin, then Carl shows up.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you can just exfoliate, then a lot of that could be probably rectified. And
my dad never used deodorant his whole life, but he never smelled bad, and he worked hard and outside, and he sweated a lot. And I remember being a little kid, and he said, "Look, all you got to do is you just make sure every day you scrub your armpits or any area that where you have hair,
the balls of your feet.
Look, we have skin, hair." And the ability for there to be sweat because what happens is your dead skin, what you're smelling under your armpits is dead skin that gets stuck in your hairs under your armpits or gets stuck in that area there. And he did that, and he never used deodorant and never had an issue. And I never got the hang of that. And I, of course, do use deodorant. And as a result, my shirts are a little bit askew from the deodorant.
I'm a huge deodorant. I love deodorant. I don't know. I mean, I do exfoliate, but I think deodorant's a...
So well, how about back in that era, like in the 50s, 60s, and shower to shower first came out, and now there's all of these lawsuits mm-hmm. now because they're saying shower to shower caused uterine cancer.
Mm-hmm. Shower to shower each day helps keep odor away.
What is shower to shower?
We wear short shorts.
It's this disgusting powder. It's like talcum powder, like a pool table, like baby powder, actually. And you just put it on you, and you don't take showers every day.
So it's like dry shampoo for your body.
Mm. No, I think you could. I don't know if it's. I mean, it could be used as a masking product, but I think you know it was just used as you know something to keep you dry.
How did the AI turn into this?
Because it was a sweat bot. He had a sweaty bot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But it was about we were talking about a sweaty bot.
Right.
That's how.
Yeah.
So we want sweaty.
Named
bots.
Kangaroo. Kangaroo. So kangaroo is pretty interesting, though. I think he's, you know, a fascinating additive, and I think it really has an important element to a real life situation or a real life experience, we'll call it, with like a humanoid.
So again, where I was going with that is my thought wasn't in terms of a physical being that's taking your order and doing sex things. My thought actually
taking your order.
Well. My thought was, like, if you go to a restaurant, like, you know, when we go to, like, 131 Main, the waitress has to memorize whatever the day's specials are. And sometimes some restaurants have 5 or 6 different specials, and they have these 3 or 4, you know, compliments to the specials. Our special is this, you know, rack of rib that was grown in Nebraska and on a farm of grass-fed cows. And blah, and they go on and on and on about all this stuff. And they got to memorize all that stuff. And they're waitresses.
They're smart.
And beyond that, they also got to remember the people. You know, some things about the people and the questions they ask and things too. And my thought was with AI that you could ask that, you could just say, you know, look at a table or something and say, tell me what's on special. And it would go, and you could ask a question. It would answer that question for you. Where is this beef grown? What's the most popular selling dish here or whatever? You know, what do you have that's vegetarian? How can you make, you know?
Well, that could be done. Yeah. A bot, right?
That's what I thought. When you said AI restaurant, that's immediately what came to my mind is it would trump. Why do you need waiters and waitresses if everything can be answered for you very specifically? And there's a place up in, I don't know if it's still there. There's a place up in Huntersville or Cornelius. Where's Berkeley? Berkeley, not Berkeley. where is that place of exit 25? It's like, is it called Berkeley? No.
Exit 25 off of what, 85 or 45?
77.
We're in Charlotte, North Carolina, if anyone's interested.
Whatever.
In understanding. 131 Main is a great restaurant, too, just for their plug.
So there was a restaurant. I'm sorry, I can't remember where it was. What were the name of it? Berkshire or Berkeley or something. But anyway, there was a restaurant, and they had tables, and the tables looked like arcade games almost. But this is 15 years ago, but on the table, it was basically a digital menu. And you would pick what you want. You'd read about this stuff, and you go, I'll take a hamburger and these fries and a Coke. And that's it. Nobody came around. And then someone would come around eventually and bring you your food. So my thought was with AI is you could ask questions, and the AI thing would answer your questions. Almost like a frequently asked questions thing, mm-hmm. you know, for AI. And that would save that. And then if you go to Japan, they have those carousels. Do you ever see that? You ever go to Japan? So they have these mm-hmm. carousels that they go around, and you can pick your food. You're like, oh, that looks good. Boop. And you just take the stuff that's there. So the AI robot.
Is it covered and packaged? Because they do that at, like, Nikado. I think it's Nikado is one of the Nikado is a, what's this?
Oh, hibachi.
Yeah, hibachi restaurant.
Or drum set, I don't know.
Yeah. And they have like a wheel that goes around in water. Yep. It's really cool. And you just, it comes by and has your sushi and you pull it off. Is it like that or is it packaged food already?
It's more like, you know, all good restaurants really have a very limited number of dishes. So it's sort of an economy of scale. And it keeps things from being too complex. And so there might be 100 different dishes on the restaurant, but if you really look at the ingredients, there's probably only 10 different ingredients just packaged in different ways, right? So what this particular thing does is it has all the different ones, and then you pick whichever one you want, and then there it is.
No, but I'm just, like, thinking, like, from, like, in a sanitary situation, like, is it packaged already and covered? So that's my problem with, like, things actually, like, yeah, people, yeah. like, talking, and then...
No, of course not.
From yeah. my memory, it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It wasn't anything. Packaged?
No.
Because you were in Japan too, right, mm-hmm. Jeff?
Yeah, I don't remember actually.
What was your Japan experience?
Well, that's a totally different society, first of all. So they can do things a little bit differently than we can as far as trusting, you know, each other. You know, there are, you know, little shops that you can walk into that are completely unmanned, and they'll be like a ramen station where you can put it together yourself, but it's the honor system of you pay for what you used, and, you know, they're the type of society that, you know, has that type of accountability, you know, for the most part, and only from what I know. But, you know, the carousel, yeah, we were there. I saw, you know, fresh, clean, you know, sushi rolling around. I mean, yeah. It's not like, you know, China buffet here where the food's embedded in the carpet and you can smell it when you walk in, you know.
Good old America.
Good old America. But
I have seen some videos. They have this in New York, and people put their phones on it, and so they can see, like, you know, they set their yes. phones on it, and they film the whole thing. So
oh, you
it goes
mean on the carousel.
Yes, yeah, so it
oh,
goes all the way around, and then it goes in the kitchen, and you see the people in the kitchen scrubbing mm-hmm. the dishes. Oh yeah,
I love
it. It gives you the full view. I think that's fascinating because mm-hmm. then you can kind of get a look.
Did
as
the people know that they put that on there?
Yeah, because I mean, it's clearly like.
Yeah.
Yeah, they set it on the little thing, like they take the plate, they set their phone there, and the phone goes all the way around. So you can see, like, people sitting at the table mm-hmm. alone. It's quite
be funny.
Yeah.
Do that at the airport on a carousel oh, where your yeah. luggage is, right? And have that.
No, John, like, this is where you actually set your phone. Oh, well, like, you put your cell phone on it. Like, right. they put their cell phone
if
on it.
If you do that in this country, someone will take your cell phone.
No, I mean, this happened in New York. Like, I've seen it.
Do you think it was a setup or do you think it was real?
No, I think
it's real. I've seen a lot yeah. of people have done it. Yeah.
It's not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's like a cute little thing to
it
do.
Is. Do they ever catch anything part, or is it just like, you know, normal, mundane, you know, day-to-day
stuff? I mean, for the most part, when you see the phone coming by on the bell, people are amused.
Yeah.
And they wave to yeah. it and whatever. And so then when the phone circles back to the owner, I'm sure, you know, stop the clip and see what happened. And yeah, I've seen plenty of those. Yeah, so I know what you're talking about, Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up here.
Yeah. This is just really cool. Just going around. Yeah, nothing's. You're right, Jess. Nothing's covered.
Yeah.
You wonder if this was pre-COVID.
You know, and that's that because we're talking about restaurants and AI. Recently, we went, or I was in a Steak and Shake, which was like, you know, at a Steak and Shake, like the diner type of, you know.
Steak and Shake is like an upgraded McDonald's, White Castle?
It kind of is, yeah.
Yeah. When they have lots of milk, they're known for their milkshakes.
Right, right.
So Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
They're known for their dairy. Steak, shake, cheese.
And you walk in,
ice cream.
And it's become like this sterile place where there is like no one to see you at the front. Like it's like a ghost counter. No one's there. And you have no choice but to order at the kiosk. So the only time you even see anyone who actually works there is when they bring that food from the kitchen and just put it on that counter.
Wait, is this in Japan?
No, this is at a Steak and Shake in Concord, North Carolina.
No.
Yeah. Yes.
Really? Wait, so they have the AI in the front?
Okay, so a lot of places are converting to kiosks to keep lines shorter, right?
Chelsea, we were just talking about that.
You know, it started with the self-checkout, and now you can go, even Taco Bell, you walk in, and instead of going to the person to put your order in, a lot of people choose to not have that interpersonal relationship, and they go to the kiosk order the same, you know, it's...
They should have drive-thrus, like we talked about. Just push the item you want, and that's it.
Now, how is that in comparison to what you witnessed and what you witnessed, John, in Japan? Like, what's the difference of, like, how far ahead of us are they in that realm? Do you think, and here's another question, part two to that question. John, you may have the answer to this one. Do you think that we haven't explored that part of society here in the United States yet with that functionality because of the unions?
I don't know.
Unions.
I'm just saying, because like now they're having all those massive layoffs. Because
you know, and all of that, but food workers.
But they worker people, not worker bots. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I just wonder why we're so behind. There has to be a reason. It's because we're not. It's not because we're behind. It's because we've chosen not to implement these things.
I think there's three reasons. First of all, until very recently, the cost of fast food labor has been very inexpensive. Labor costs are very low. The cost of technology until very recently has been very high. And as of recent, the cost of labor has gone way up and the cost of technology has gone way down. That's number one. Number two, and this is just my opinion. Number two, I feel like there's a human connection that we all long for at our core. One of the reasons why I don't like working from home all the time is because I like to interact with people, not on conference calls, not on video, but actually face-to-face like we're doing right now. And when we go to eat, it's that human experience to be served, to banter, to do these things. And when you lose that completely, you lose part of the experience of actually going out when you actually don't get to see anything. And I think the third part is people are slow to embrace technology when something else is working. Places like McDonald's are cash cows. They make tons and tons of money every single day by following a formula. And at this moment, that formula does not involve those kind of things. But, you know, to Jess's point, I didn't know Steak and Shake was doing that. I haven't been to a Steak and Shake in a while. But I do know that you know, there have been these experimental places where they said, you know, push these things in, order your stuff, you know. They work. They're very effective. They save your cost of labor in the short run. And it's a long end game. But I'm curious to know, how reliable are they? Did stuff break down? And when they do, they got to call an IT guy to fix it, like Johnny. And the IT guy, like Johnny, charges a lot more than, you know, the person who works there.
So you figure if you spend $50,000 on a couple kiosks or a couple bots, like they have, it's called, was it Tipsy or not Tipsy? There's the bartender's arms that are in Las Vegas, and they serve drinks, and they can make up to like 70 drinks, and you can create any drink that you want. And it even slices lemons and limes.
That's amazing, really.
Yeah, they'll have those as chefs at some point in your house, and you just program what you want. Yeah. All your ingredients are there, and it'll know where to get the ingredients and how to make the food at some point, in my opinion. I haven't seen that, but I'm pretty sure that they'll. But the ones that I did see that were in Las Vegas, I mean, they were pretty impressive. I mean, and then when they're not, but what they did was they had the humans, the girls, the ladies that were there working, that would serve the drinks if they had to go to the tables and stuff. So they had them in their cute outfits and standing and doing their things. So still like a bottle service was still available. Mm-hmm. But then they also have like another bot called Pepper.
Yes, and Pepper's so adorable.
Pepper, yeah, and Pepper can do everything. And Pepper is an assistant, is how it cleans your house. It's like a upgraded Roomba that learns all of your stuff. I just can't.
Pepper also
was. You know about Pepper.
Pepper was programmed to also read emotions on facial expressions. Mm. So he can, you know, change his questions and phrasing from that. I did meet a Pepper once. Yeah.
No.
There was one in the DC airport at a restaurant, and it would seat people. And, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, the model I knew of anyways kind of looked like this cute little Yeah, yeah. He's like, you know, three and a half foot tall, little cutie. And then he's got like this iPad for a chest, basically, that you
There's
you
one know. Called iPal also. Instead of your iPad, you can have an iPal, which is similar to Pepper. But iPal. So that's cool. So they have them. Because you figure if you pay...
They're actually fairly inexpensive last time, because I was joking around about getting a Pepper one day. I was thinking about how, you know, that would be so cool to have, you know, someone check in for their classes with Pepper and, like, you know, be able to access their...
That'll be the new mortgages for everything. It'll be, like, for your bot. Instead of house mortgages, as like, that's, like, you know, a hot thing. Everybody will be mortgaging everything and need a mortgages for their bots. That's for you, John, because you have a mortgage company. Go ahead, Jess.
Viewer Susan and wife Susan, she just chimed in. The automat paved the way for fast food in the early 90s. Before there was AI, automats were an efficient vending machine style restaurant that signaled to many Americans the future in dining had arrived. So what happened to them? At the turn of the century, New Yorkers rushed to a new kind of dining establishment, this article says, one they felt represented all the sleekness and efficiency of a future, the automat. As a sort of ancestor to the vending machine, automats were a wall of coin-operated cubbies that contained hot food and beverages behind a glass window. They provided a quick and delicious meal, I don't know about the delicious part, to hundreds of thousands of diners daily at low prices thanks to waiterless service. The automat was supposed to catapult dining in the future, but it was eventually out-competed by the rise of faster food options. And then it tells a big story about the future of dining quickly became a thing of the past. So it didn't really work out. So that's the other thing, too. Imagine what you said, you know, I don't know if it's going to cost $50,000 or $500,000, but it's going to be expensive, right? And imagine, do you want to be the first restaurant to take a chance on something that might not work?
How much was Pepper, Jeff?
Oh, I mean, I could be really wrong, but, you know, you'd have to have your maintenance fee every month with that. But the purchase price, I think, was under $5,000.
Yeah, here's what it's going to boil down to. Who has upfront money? If you have upfront money and you can afford a bot, in the long run, in 3 years, you save. Because if you can buy a bot for 20 grand, and then what you pay somebody is 50 grand for the year or 30 grand for the year, and you can spend the 30 upfront or get a mortgage for that, in 3 years, you're going to save the money that it would cost to pay people to do stuff. That's where the savings comes in, is in the 3-year savings, in the second year, the third year.
Again, though, John brought up a great point of the human connection. If you look, I mean, you know, I have a degree in psychology, and I think nurture versus nature, when you look at animals, I mean, they don't do human studies like this, but if, like, you know, there is a animal that doesn't have a mom, they either put, like, they put stuffed animals in there, okay, that there's nothing, but if there's, like, warmth and a heartbeat and stuff like that, they tend to thrive a little bit more. So I do think about the human connection, and there's not going to be a robot. I mean, yes, I guess this one, Pepper, reads emotions, but there's not going to be that human connection that I think people long for, and I think, you know, I think robots can only go so far. But when I was looking at Pepper, let me just bring this up quick. It broke the Guinness World Record. They had 100 Peppers doing a cheer. Yeah. So the robot cheering squad, which started with just 5 robots at the beginning, increased in number and friends with each match. At the same time, the official game started. So we're talking, I guess this started back at a baseball game. In June of 2020 during COVID, and we formed a robot cheering party using the vacant seats to bring bright topics and energy to fans that were forced to refrain from entertaining in the stadium.
Where was this at?
I see. It looks like it was in, I cannot pronounce this. I don't even want to try it. Fukuoka?
Oh, is it an Asian country?
Japan. Yeah. So it looks like FUK.
Because they're the start. They have the biggest handle on the bots right now. As they created them. They've nurtured the growth of them. The Japanese market is the biggest market for humanoids and bots.
It looks like the leader in humanoid robotics is SoftBank Robotics. Its European headquarters is in Paris.
Oh, okay.
With 180 employees. Interesting. Well, anyways, I mean, I would not mind, like, it's really kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing a bunch of these, like, little, hey.
I mean, they have a dog, too. You can get a dog. They have a little, but to your point, Chelsea, when I saw the dog, and I thought, yeah, it doesn't take a crap, You don't have to work.
It's true.
It doesn't shed.
It doesn't shed. I mean, it, yeah, there's a lot of pluses to it. But there's one thing that it doesn't have in that sentence. It has, I think these are going to, what I equate bots to, but they're, that's the big run right now. The race to sentience. Am I saying it
sentience.
Right? Sentience. Sentience is the game. That's the game changer. If your bot can, if you can create sentience, then you have mastered the humanoid element. Now, is, you know where you're going to get it? In my opinion, chipping a human being. That's where you're going to get your sentience. If not, you're going to get a psychopathic manipulator that learns you and can, and can, it may not act as in a nasty way of a psychopath, in a negative derogatory way, but it's the psychopathic tendencies that a psychopath has, because psychopath, they learn you and then they work you and they manipulate you. And that's essentially what these things are doing. They're learning your personality. They're understanding what your needs are, but in a positive way, psychopath positive.
Psychopath positive?
I guess that would be what it'd be. Psychopath positive.
That sounds like my, all my ex-girlfriends.
No, there you go.
Two of them.
Ninth degree clingers.
Let's talk about that though. Like, do you guys all like the AI? I mean, what are your personal thoughts?
I would never have that little dog bot. I would, I love my little,
I know,
Nutsy.
There's that human.
Oh my God. There's no way I can have a hair.
I like my dog.
It's worth him taking a poop.
Yeah. Obviously the technology is going in that direction. And the people that are pioneering that technology, you know, this is new frontiers for humankind, right? So, you know, at the same time, there's not really a check and balance of like, how much do we need, really? Do we have what we need? Do we need to keep going in this direction? And then, you know, I feel like most people are afraid of this kind of era because it's like, you know, once we go too far, can we even revert, you know? And human connection isn't, you know, it's actually vital, you know, to us it as is. A species. And, you know, yes, this technology will keep going, and there's always ways to make more money and make things more convenient and more efficient. But at the end of the day, you know, where's, what's that line for us as humans as far as reduced connection and as far as how efficient do we, what are we really looking for at the end of the day? What is a fulfilled life? What is a, is convenience really, you know, the most important thing, you know? This- Yeah.
How did that relate in Japan?
Well, what I'm,
was there people that they, did they connect there?
I think that there is a sense of balance in that culture where they can have that type of responsibility to, you know when something is too much and know when to value, you know, for example, you know, the way that that place, what I experienced, you know, it's very metropolitan, but at the same time, you turn any corner and there's going to be a sacred garden for you to have. Any moment you can take a few steps and turn and you can have that for yourself, that space that we need, and that balance. You know, there are restaurants, you know, yes, you can have those self-serve, you know, ramen stops and that honor system, but there are also tons and tons of these small restaurants that maybe only fit 10 people at a bar, but there's like a huge cultural connection in experiencing that as a, as part of their routine. And I feel like that, I don't know if Americans necessarily can handle that, you know, if AI and all of these things continue to become so great and so invasive into our culture, I don't know if we understand what balance we're even looking for. Because to me, and I, it's a little pessimistic, but I believe that, you know, we have a lot of Western sickness here. It's just this, you know, it's greed. It's greed and then way over convenience. So to me, I see pluses of AI. I do understand that, you know, that just means that humans' jobs are going to change. I get that. There will still be something to do. And or AI to work with in some means, but when, what are we trying to do? You know what I mean? I What's guess that's that the question mean? At the end of the day. Where are we going?
When I think of my favorite I'm sorry. I was just going to say, when I think of my favorite restaurants, I think of the people that serve me. Or I you know, I don't go out as much as I used to, but I used to go to a place called Joel's up in Mooresville. It's a little sushi restaurant. And I remember Edgar.
Mooresville, Joel's. Joel's in Mooresville.
You would think in Mooresville, North Carolina, there wouldn't be a good sushi restaurant. And there's not. However, Joel's is the better one out of the two that are there. But I remember like Edgar, the guy that served me in London, and Joel, of course. And
Joel himself actually worked there and served you.
Yeah. Joel owned it. Yeah, he owned two of them actually. And but you know, he'd come over and say, "How you doing?" and make some kind of a Japanese joke or something that I didn't get, but I would laugh, and I just felt comfortable. I felt like he liked me. It might have been I'm just a customer to him, but it didn't feel like it. I felt like I'm almost a friend. Mm-hmm. You know, the same thing with my waiter, and I like going out. I liked the fact that I like learning about people. Hey, do you go to school? What do you do? And how did you work here? And just things like that. I think I would just, if there was nobody physically there to serve, I would just always get it to go, probably.
Yeah, because I mean, that's totally true.
Why would you talk to anybody?
Right.
You know.
I feel that way with Eddie's place in Cotswold. I feel there's a server there named Caroline. Shout out to you, Caroline. You're amazing. But she, I don't know. It's like I look forward to going there just to, like, you know, say hi and
Eddie's
see her.
Eddie's place in Cotswold, North Carolina is definitely.
It's like the greasy spoon that you need.
But a high-end one. Mm-hmm. A high-end
it
one.
Is,
it's
yeah.
not, a high-end greasy
it's
spoon.
Not, it's not.
Well, no, when I say greasy spoon, I don't look at it as derogatory. Mm-hmm. I look at it as like you go in whatever you want to wear. It's because sometimes in places in Charlotte.
It's a breakfasty kind of place too.
It is. So yes. Yeah. Like, but like you can go in your pajamas and like not get judged. I
like
love.
Dixie. No, I'm just kidding.
What's Winn-Dixie?
Food Lion.
What?
Oh. Yeah, sorry, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, you know, you don't have to be like the who's who or like dressed to impress. It's like you can go as you are. The food is delicious and consistent. And, yeah, I mean, I'm just parlaying into what you said, John, about.
Is Winn-Dixie owned by Kroger?
It may be soon. So another thing, Kroger just bought Albertsons. By the way, Joel is Filipino, he pointed out, or Susan pointed out. He's not even Asian, apparently. He just looks like it. You brought a good point up. Right now, Pizza Hut is having a big hard time, like a lot of fast food places, recruiting delivery drivers. And they did some research to find out why, and all the usual reasons came up. But one of the big reasons was drivers said they don't feel human anymore because people say, just leave it at the door. I don't want to interact with you. I don't want to take your money. I mean, I don't want to see you. I don't
want
to hear
from you. Do you think that's a way for them to get out of tipping?
No, because you put the tip in ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And I will say, when I was in college.
What the hell are you working for? To be a friend of the guy you're delivering a pizza? Hand over the loot. I'm out of here. Next.
You know what, though?
I wouldn't give two craps if they wanted to visit.
Not
just me.
I delivered pizza all through high school.
Like, I don't want to visit with you. Go have your pizza.
Well, John
I'll
has
take
a,
my money and run.
But he has a different perspective.
So I delivered pizza a lot, and I actually didn't like the people that made talk for more than a minute or two because you're right. You do have a job to do, and you want to get done, and it's all about how many deliveries you can make, and that's how you make a living. And I get that.
The faster, the better.
However, I also didn't like it when I delivered pizza to somebody. Of course, back then there was no AI or anything, and they just didn't say a word to you. They just took their pizza and slammed the door. They didn't say thank you. They didn't say F you. They didn't say anything. And
obviously, I'm the minority then, because if they're having a hard time finding drivers, they feel a lot like you do.
Well, when you do that type of job, you require minimal respect, I mean, or meaning in what you're doing, because if you're having to make money and do something like that and drive and deliver pizzas, for what? You know what I mean? If you're going and no one's going to talk to you or you know, treat you as if you're already, you know, nothing.
I don't even want to answer my door. Just leave it at the door, you scumbag. That must be how they feel.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
it's like that level
of that. I always think of it like, we're not here to be friends. We're here to,
and that's just,
we're just doing a job.
Experience of a service worker, though, you know, like, because if you have to work in service,
in
you know,
service
it does.
And it's so much different. I completely have 150% different outlook on that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard for my wife, who's listening, I think, to hang up on somebody, anybody. If I get a call and I don't know who it is and I have to answer, because I do, if I don't recognize the number and it's not spam, and they say, hey, is this Mr. Case? And they start mispronouncing my name. Mm-hmm. I already know the strike one. Okay. And I'll say, yeah. And they'll say, I'm here with XYZ Real. And I know they're trying to sell me something. I won't say I'm not interested. I'll just hang up and go back to work. It won't even occur to me not to say anything to them. I feel like I'm not going to buy their product or service. And if I talk to him, to Wendy's point, it's just going to waste her time and be rude.
That's
to
true. I do
and
hang
so the
up
easy
too.
Thing is hang
yeah.
up.
I do too.
Susan mm-hmm. cannot hang up. I'm sorry, honey. She cannot hang up on anybody. She'd be aww. Like, yes. Oh, I don't. Yeah. You know, actually, I'm not interested in that because the other day my cousin came from out of town and already sold me one, and we did. And she'll talk for. And of course, the person has a line for that. Say, well, did you know
that's
ours
exhausting.
Are better? And it just, yeah, it's just so like. And at some point, I'll hear her talking for five, and she'll say, you know, we went car shopping, and the guy's like, and what? And you didn't like the car? And she's like, well. oh, I didn't look this. And the comfort level was that. And I was just, and she gets done, and she's so sweet and polite. And I said, Susan, why don't you just say I'm not interested in hanging up? They don't need to know all this stuff.
Where is Susan from?
Wisconsin.
Okay, so listen, I'm from Minnesota. And I kid you not, I was just talking to Wendy about this the other day. There was an article posted, and there's a real thing called Minnesota Nice. Now, Wisconsin is our neighboring state. But literally, I'm going to pull this article up. I think, though, I get uber uncomfortable being controversial, being a, like, I can hear, I can kind of relate to her being like, I want to be the nice person and listen to what they have to say, get their spiel out. I mean, I get it. I think it might be a regional thing. It might be a Midwest, Minnesota nice, Wisconsin nice, type of thing. So I don't know, I'm going to pull this article, but I do find it fascinating that she has a hard time hanging up, because I feel like that is it's sort of a fault of us in the Midwest.
And I was that way too, until I realized that you're not doing someone a favor by listening to their pitch if you have no interest in it. Like, their goal is to make as many calls as they can, and eventually if they call 100 people, you know, three of them might have some interest and one of them might buy something. So they know they have to do 100 calls a day to get a sale. And if I'm listening to them going on and I have zero, like, I've just sold my house. Well, for whatever reason, my house went pending the day after we listed it. But for whatever reason, realtors keep calling anyway and saying, just want to know if your house falls through, you know, we're interested. And I know that. And I know it's not going to fall through. And I think everything's going to go just fine. So I'll just say, as soon as someone calls and goes, hey, is this the person who owns the house at 230 South Tri? Done. I'm on the phone. I don't want to waste your time and let you pitch the whole thing and tell me about your organization and all that. I'm not doing any favor. And there's something called being Southern. People in the South
bless
just don't
want
to. Bless your heart. They don't want to say no. And I first came up here and they said, John, if you're ever trying to sell anything up here, people will go, nobody will say no to you. And I'm like, this is great. I'm going to become a salesperson. They're like, no. They'll never buy anything. They just won't say no. They'll be like, oh, tell me more. Okay, wow, that sounds really good. Yeah. Why don't you come back on Tuesday when I'm not here? You know, and maybe I'll be interested. Because they just can't say no, but they'll never do anything anyway. Whereas New Yorkers, where Wendy's from, they'll just say, I'm not interested in that. Get lost. And I learned something. I'd rather have that get lost thing right up front because I can move on.
Well, you know what? I've completely changed my whole thought process on spam. And now what I do is, like, my thing is, I think everybody's missing the boat, because here's the boat. You're getting free advertising all day long. So take advantage of it.
What do you mean?
So when they call me, what I do is I say, Arbitzer Radio and Media Streaming Service, how can I help you? Are you looking for streaming service today? And they're like, And then they're like, can we speak with da-da-da? I'm like, she's not available, but I can send you to our sales department. Would you like streaming service? What services are you looking for? What stations would you like? We have six to choose from.
You're really nice.
And then they're like,
we have a lot of listeners right now who are spammers, former spammers.
No, that's what I'm saying. So I'm nice to them, but they're selling me something when I'm selling them something. And I think we have a mutual meeting ground. And I think, and a lot of them will hang up. But you know what?
That's
16
funny.
Opportunities of advertising that I had today. Mm-hmm. And somewhere, some way, people listen. And if you're cool with them, and they know what they're doing, and I know what I'm doing, and it's okay. We're doing each other. We're doing, you know, it's consensual.
Here's how to get them to listen to the station. Next time they call, Wendy, I want you to do this. Hi, what's your name?
You're on the air.
Mahmood.
Just won!
Mahmood, what is your favorite R-Beats radio station?
You're the 100th caller.
You're caller number 6, because you're the 6th spammer today, right? And they're going to be thinking like, what? Yeah.
That's cool.
My favorite R-Beats station? Yeah, R-Beats, R-E-B-E-A-T-Z. What's your favorite station? Which one? We've got 6 choices. If you choose the right one, you will be our next grand prize winner. Just listen. You know, what am I listening to? Then you turn them on.
But you know, to everybody out there that's listening, you know, utilize spam. You know, use it to your benefit, because they buy stuff too. They're looking for a podcast to listen to. Also, they're just doing a job. They're doing a job.
I would recruit them for, I don't know how much stuff they buy, but I would say they want a job and it's not the one they have.
Yeah, and they got kahunas, because they're willing to make those cold calls and get rejected 75,000 times a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, if they get somebody that'll play the game with them, they might listen. And, hey, then they may check you out. What's the chances of
turning the tables?
You know?
I like it.
Yeah.
So AI has populated the spam calls. And that's why, by the way, when you get a call and then they hang up on, like what happened in the days when we hung up on telemarketers? Now, of course, telemarketers hang up on us. And I wanted to know, like, what the heck is up with that? Why is it like 9 out of 10 calls I get from a telemarketer, they hang up?
Yeah, it is interesting.
And why is that?
Here's why. Here's the answer. It turns out, they've turned the tables on us, AI, they realize that if someone's making calls, 95 out of 100 people don't even answer their phone if they don't recognize a number. So they got to call, ring. Hi, you've reached out. They're going to listen to the answer machine and then maybe leave a message or just call and keep doing that again. So they decide, you know what? This is way too time consuming. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to call five numbers at the same time. And as soon as one picks up, we're hanging up on the other four. And so the calls you get, they get
I pick up.
And they hang up.
Right? Yeah.
They hang up because someone else already picked up before you and they hung up on everybody else, including you.
Oh, well, that's just... I don't get it. I feel like that's just such a waste.
Telemarketers hang up on you because the telemarketer calls five people at the same time. Ring once, ring twice, you answer the phone, right? I'm calling all you guys.
Oh,
right?
I see.
As soon as you answer the phone, I start talking to you, and I hang up on all you guys.
Okay. So they just select the person that the pick up on the first ring as opposed to the third ring.
You don't pick up the same moment.
No, I just don't understand it though, because if they keep hanging up, like I do get a call like this every single day, and I used to not pick up, but now I pick up, and it's like, you have been placed on a hold, and then all of a sudden it hangs up, and I'm like, hello,
I wanted to buy something, not that thing, but okay.
I'm not going to be placed on a hold.
Chelsea Walsh does not like to not engage with telemarketers. She wants to communicate with them, and she does not want you to hang up. And her phone number is 704.
Oh, stop.
And if they were nice to her, she might organize for them.
Yeah, That was my purpose.
She actually organizes her spam calls in her phone.
I do.
This is the guy that calls me every day at noon. This is the one that hangs up on me. This is the one I hang up on.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, listen, let's go back to the seven characteristics of Midwest and maybe why your wife does not want to hang up. Susan does not want to hang up on people. We have seven characteristics. Number one is polite friendliness. Number two is aversion to confrontation. Okay, she's probably averting the conversation and hanging up and being mean.
I would say she's both of those things.
Not wanting to intrude is number three. Mm-hmm. Emotional restraint is number four. Number five is resistant to change. Six is passive aggressiveness. And number seven is... understatement.
Oh my God! You gotta send me that. That's her exactly.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
So this is passive aggressiveness. My dad passed away 10 years ago. He was a lifetime member of the NRA. The NRA is a scam organization. I'm not anti-gun, but the NRA is a scam organization designed to steal money from people who are afraid their guns are gonna lose their guns. Somehow the NRA follows us around. We've changed addresses. We moved everything. We keep getting stuff in the mail. This is her passive aggressiveness. She will open the envelope up, and she'll stuff a bunch of, because it's free postage return, and she'll stuff it with a bunch of coupons. And she'll go, well, maybe they want these coupons. I'm like, why are you doing this? Because it cost them money when I sent this back to them. And she sends back this big stuffed envelope.
That's the best way to fight that.
Yes, that's the passive aggressive.
Do they keep sending her stuff?
Yeah, all the time.
Even when they send the coupons?
They don't know what comes from her. All they get is this. So somebody at a sorting mill has to open this up and go, what is this? And take all these coupons and not know what the heck to do with that. And basically, of course, there's no check to go with it. And then she's kind of out of luck. And then when you said, what's the last one? Modesty or
understatement.
Understatement, yeah.
Understatement,
She drives a 2007 Camry that looks fine and runs fine. So she's like, I don't ever want to get rid of this. And people in our HOA is like, you know, in this neighborhood, you probably should drive a 2009. No, they don't say that. But I think they must think that. And I'm like, honey, we can buy a new car if you want to. And she's like, why? Why would I want to? This car is great. I don't want to. And she won't drive my car because she's like, your car is kind of showy. And I got it brown and everything just so it looked like a regular car. And she said, it's still, now that people know what that car is, I don't want to drive it because people think it's a showy car. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So there's the understatement, totally. Yeah. She doesn't like confrontation. And the thing about not liking confrontation, you think that would be a good thing in a spouse. And by the way, I love her to death, so I know she knows that. Aww. But you think it would be a good thing in the sense that, like...
You guys have a wonderful union.
We do, right?
Yes,
we do. And you're anti-union, so for you to say that...
No, I'm not anti-union. I only said that because I was trying to figure out why it's taken us so long over here to get that realm in place. Anyway, back to your union.
No. So you think if you had a spouse that doesn't like confrontation, you would win every argument, right? And it's kind of true, except that doesn't mean you win every argument. It just means they're not going to argue with you no matter what. Mm-hmm. So if I want to have a debate and like I'll make my case, and she's like, well, you think you're always right about everything. Well, I am. Otherwise, I would change my opinion. What's your opinion? I disagree. What do you want to tell me? Not really. Because she doesn't want to be confrontational. Uh-huh. But then I lose the argument because even if I won the argument in my head, it doesn't matter because she didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly right. So she just doesn't want to be
argumentative. I'm telling you, it is it's to a fault. Wendy and I were driving yesterday, and of course I let everybody go ahead of me. I waved them, oh, you know, hey. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about our different driving, you know, like, styles. And Wendy's more of an aggressive driver. I mean, she's like, you know, I go to the very last minute and then sometimes I like swoop in and I'm just.
Wendy's a very aggressive driver though.
What? I can't even,
I've never met a driver, an adult driver who's not a teenager who drives more aggressive than you.
You're kidding.
It's a combination of impressive, scary, and embarrassing all at the same time.
I don't think embarrassing, but I do see the scary part and impressive. I mean, I think you, Mr. Colin, you could have been a NASCAR driver weaving in and out of traffic. It is.
It's still Florida driving.
Well, I had my car in Manhattan, and I learned to drive on LBJ Freeway in Texas, in Dallas, Texas. That was where I really learned my driving skills, and that was a hellacious interstate, and you know, on and off ramps and service roads, and that. And then driving in New York, I would kick the cab's ass.
Oh, I'm sure.
I loved it. Well, it was actually fun because they thought it was cool that I had a little black Saturn. So I could go in, you know, I could get in and out of places. And they thought it was cool. There's like a young chick that would like kick their ass. And they were like, we were like, you know, bringing it on. We were like, you know.
They thought it was cool. I was
fist
cutting
pumping
them off.
At the red light. Yeah, man.
So there's Wendy from New York who drives that
way. Yeah.
But the same thing down in Miami, you know, from living down there. It's that driving. You have to be aggressive or you get nowhere.
Right. Yeah, I would get nowhere. And people do the opposite. They're like, I'm not letting you in. And you're like.
And it's a lot of different, it was a melting pot of people. So you had a lot of different type drivers, you know, like if you go to certain, well, it used to be like you could go at certain parts of the country and like, you know, I know like sometimes, you know, in Pittsburgh, people didn't know how to weave. Bob and weave, baby, bob and weave. Get in and out, off and on to the exit, you know, no rubbernecker, you know, backups here. You know, but they didn't know how to bob and weave. But now that was a long time ago. Now today there's a lot more people in a lot more areas. And I think that's more of a multiple. Even here in North Carolina, their driving was more prone to what Chelsea was used to, where they would sit. When I first came here, they sit at first encounter. Oh, yeah.
I do. And I let people through. Mm-hmm. I'm that person.
Do
that's
think-
like
my first encounters. They were.
And then people honk from behind and they're like, you know, let them go. Yeah.
Do you think people make generalizations by what you'd based on the car you drive?
Oh, I'm sure.
Because I know I do.
Let's say that. I'll take it personal. I'll because I can't speak for anybody else. But I mean, if someone's driving like, you know, a bright green Ferrari or Lamborghini or something and they're driving, you know, I would say they're going to bob and weave and be crazy drivers. Like I drive a practical Nissan Rogue and I'm sort of a practical person that will let people through and I'm driving Miss Daisy.
A Chevy Rabbit.
What's that?
A Chevy Rabbit. You mean a VW Rabbit?
No, I mean, I'm talking about the little blue one with the hatchback.
It's a VW.
Is that like, no. There's
Metro?
No, it was like
Geo
a
Metro?
This was like a. It was like a Pacer,
an AMC Gremlin,
kind of like back. Well, like back.
Why did you have one of those?
It was the baby blue rabbit, and I mean, I was just as aggressive in that car as I am in my car today. In fact, that one I was worse with because I knew I could beat it up. So if I wanted to ram it into something, I would run into something.
Oh my gosh!
The box fell down. By the way, outside.
See? No.
Yes.
Holy cow! Where did it go?
It just fell down. I don't know.
We've been keeping an eye on this building.
There's
across
a
the way.
Huge box on the top of a
15-story building. I thought it was a
building.
Mattress.
It
looks
like halfway
a...
over, and now it fell over. I guess. So there's...
somebody must have left a box on the top of the rooftop. Now that's a but. Okay.
Well, that's a liability.
Up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and probably the bottom floor, right on top of what's that big restaurant that's over there?
First Watch, ironically.
No.
Del Frisco's.
Oh, okay. Del Frisco's.
Yeah, I love
Del Frisco's.
Yeah, Del Frisco's.
And
great food.
It is right across the street, and it's 8 stories up from that. And there was a big, I guess it was a box, maybe.
Or
now that you mention it, it could have been a box. Somebody unpacked something and put the trash up there, and it was Johnson keeping his eye on it. And it's now gone.
Hmm. Unless maybe someone took it off because someone else noticed and they called.
Maybe they were fixing it. Like,
thank you for sharing the Minnesota nice. This seems like it's a stereotype, but it's so true.
It is. I'm telling you.
In Vermont, I will tell you, I don't know if it's still this way, but nobody ever locks their door in Vermont. If you're a burglar, please don't go to Vermont. I mean, we never had a key growing up. It never even occurred to me to lock my door. I didn't know anybody would lock their door. If you knock on the door, everyone says, come in, even when they're not expecting you.
Really?
Yeah. That's just Vermont.
Oh. I don't know about all that business. I do leave my back door unlocked sometimes. I'm not going to tell you where I live. But it does happen. I know it's really bad.
But there's nobody in the crawl space.
Yeah, there is no one in the crawl space.
How do you know?
We sealed that sucker up.
Because I have like a lock on it now. I just moved recently. It's a safe place for a homeless person
with belongings.
Well, yeah, I don't know. But there were some weird noises going on under my house.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. But guess what it ended up being? My refrigerator.
You put your refrigerator under your house?
No, it was making these noises in the kitchen, like crackling, and, you know, I let...
It was the ice maker?
No, it wasn't. It was the coils cooling, and I have video of it. It was quite loud, but anyways.
It was a bit creepy.
It was.
And what, would it reverberate through the crawl space to, like,
well,
other areas?
Well, so I had a friend staying with me, and she was staying... I gave her my bed, and I was in the guest room.
This is wild.
Yeah, and so she was, like... Shout out to Cassandra, by the way. She's in Chicago. Woo-woo.
Hi, Cassandra.
But she was staying in my bed, and she's not one to, like, fabricate stories. Well, lo and behold, she was sleeping, and I heard, like, we both actually woke up to this noise, which was resonating from my kitchen. And I was always paralyzed in my bed. Like, what is the sound? But she was in my room, so I'm like, okay, I'm brave now. I have a girl that's also in my house. And I go to the kitchen, and sure enough, it's in my fridge making all these noises. But she had said, you know, I didn't want to wake you or alarm you, but I felt the bed move. Like, the bed had shifted. And she's like, I felt like a thud. And then, like, something kind of rolled under the mattress. And I was like, I mean, my bed is up. It's not like on the floor, but, and I was like, oh, okay. And so then I called Wendy that morning, and she came over to investigate. She's like, let me come right now. And she did. She showed up, and I'm like, okay, girl. So we were investigating.
I had my head on with the light.
Yeah, she did. I mean,
what would you have done if it was a giant guy?
Well, we thought maybe there was like an animal. She's like, I thought maybe.
I had my mace gun with me.
We thought, you know, I don't know.
Or a homeless person, maybe just,
well,
you know,
we didn't
found shelter.
I'm kind of close to the city. I mean, I'm in near uptown. So it was like, okay, well, you don't know. And so there was nothing under there. It's still not explained as to why.
But what Cassandra said was, it sounded like somebody, they're bumped their back on the under the floor behind, underneath her, under the bed, and then
went,
tried to walk. Yeah, then there was like a scraping of like a jacket because it was still cold out, like walking under the like that went the length of the bed of the room.
Yeah,
and then it stopped.
Yeah, so this is all happening.
I used to hear that. I used to think that in my head when I was 7, and I think I'm gonna be going into bed, and someone's gonna jump and grab my heels and pull me out of the bed, and so I would just run and jump onto the bed so that I wouldn't.
Oh, that's always scary. What lives under your bed as a kid?
But then
I mean,
turned 8.
Is that a movie?
No, but that should be. No. I kid you not. Yeah. I was terrified of like stuff under my bed. Can anybody else relate? John,
yes.
You could?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That was a real thing. Yeah. That and closets. I'd always have to have my mom check the closet and under the bed. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, I would jump to the bed. Yeah. Or having an appendage, like an arm or leg, hanging over the bed. I have to be fully contained in my bed. Let's talk. I still have a fear of that. It's so weird, but I can't have an arm or like a toe even hanging off the bed. I have to be fully
because
in it.
Might grab it.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's the movies.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I used to think that the devil had a complete whole laboratory that would bubble with all of his bottles and stuff, and he was fixing, making.
If you believe in a big fiery pit and everything else, then why would that be a stretch?
Yeah,
think about it.
I just thought, because I watched The Exorcist and I wasn't allowed to watch it, and
oh,
I snuck
that is such...
and watched it. Yeah. I had a babysitter, and I snuck. I had I was on a landing, and I stayed there and watched it while she was watching it with like these dudes that were there that she was there with my, I don't know, whatever. So she was babysitting, so I snuck and watched it, and that movie scared the crap out of me.
Well, the fact is, it's true. I mean, you know, those things are. I think any spiritual, like,
really
warfare type movie.
People in your bed sometimes, kids. Just so you know.
Have you seen The Exorcist?
No.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it can happen.
No? I didn't know that, John.
I don't like seeing people get scared, unless they're silly, you know, campy ones. I don't like seeing people genuinely be scared or terrified.
Oh, I do not like scary movies.
I know. Really? I feel like my little heart can't take it anymore. It used to be fine, but now it's like, I don't want to.
Campy ones are funny.
God.
You know, ones with the teenagers.
I love Stephen King.
Oh, no.
I do. Oh, my God. He's a mastermind.
All of his books, yeah.
Oh, he's so brilliant. I mean, he's there's a lot of other brilliant movie creators out there, but he is definitely got it going on.
I think if you have
actually met him one time, I was like,
you
really
did,
cool.
Did
Stephen King?
Yeah, it was a really bizarre story. My cousin was an avid Stephen King fan. She read every one of his books, and was like, back then it was like The Stand. Speaks to my age, but and so we did a whole trip through New England, like in a scout, me and my cousins, and so we went up to Maine. You know, this also speaks to the time frame that we were in back then, and they had tracked him down to his a postal place, like a post office in Maine, and the lady's like, yeah, she lives right down the street, go visit him. And we were like, you're serious? So we showed up at his door and knocked on the door.
What?
And we went to his house, and he opened the thing and he went like this, and that, like how like it's like hold
she's
on
holding up a number
no,
one.
Actually it was his little boy.
She's holding a knife.
I think
I'm well, just giving the audience, you know,
yeah, at
a
that
visual.
Point, yeah, his son was really, really young, and he like crept the door open. He's like, "Hold on a minute," and then so we're all just sitting there, we're talking, we're waiting for him, whatever. And all of a sudden, this big bugle horn blew, and it scared the living daylights out of all of us.
What was it?
It was a bugle horn that blew. It was him, and he opened up the door and like blew this huge horn and scared the crap out of every single one of us.
Why?
Well, that's just interesting. That,
and then he came out and he talked to us, and we sat and we had a conversation with him. And he
it's been turning the tables like the spam callers.
Yeah. He took pictures with us. I still have the pictures. What? And he and my aunt had a beer distributor, and so he was a beer collector. So they, you know, exchanged beer cans for a few, you know, maybe times.
Well, I tried beer cans.
And
who
and he was
came
absolutely
at?
Wonderful. His wife Tabitha was there. She came out. And
this is fascinating.
It was really cool.
Wow. How old were you?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I think I was probably, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 maybe.
Wow. And you still have a picture?
Yeah.
That is really cool. That's an interesting and kind of bizarre story, actually.
It is a bizarre story. I remember the whole thing. It was like yesterday. It was super cool. He was, you know, so he's just a badass.
Wow.
Yeah, my mom has most of his books, and I had never read any of them, and I was asking her, like, you know, what's this thing with Stephen King like? You know, what if I were to start in on this, what would be, like, the first book? And she, you know, is nonverbal, but she made it known that, like, you should, you know, try The Stand, which is so funny that you bring that up. So I actually, that's the only one that I personally own.
Really?
Starting on it, yeah.
Okay.
But that's a, yeah, so it's funny that you met him.
Susan says she was scared of the Scooby-Doo cartoons.
Does Susan like scary movies?
No.
Yeah, no.
But Scooby-Doo, remember Scooby-Doo? Like, it was always like this burglar that would like, they remind me of all, I know you're a big fan of him, but they remind me of like all the characters in the Trump administration. They're always like trying like this little scandal, and they put this thing over it, like, Mr. Whip, I would have got away with it too if it wasn't for those damn dog and those stupid kids. They say at the end of every movie, do you remember the Scooby-Doo series at all?
No, I mean, I remember the song. I think it's Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
Yes.
Where are you? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I don't. So there was a character. There was a kid. The cool thing about it was they were supposed to be teenagers, and the teenagers were supposed to solve mysteries in their little mystery mobile.
Well, the mystery machine, which is Johnny. Hey, Johnny, if you're listening. Yeah.
Shout out to Johnny.
And then they had this giant, this Great Dane named Scooby, and his owner, I guess, was Shaggy. And they both had one thing in common.
They both were Great Dane.
Yep. They were both super, super hungry all the time, which is weird because Shaggy was super skinny, right? And they tried to, and everybody had to have their own little character or their own flavor. And Shaggy's thing was, like, he would start every sentence with the word like. And what happened 30 years later? Oh, the teenagers now, they can't do anything. I was like going to the store and like, that came from Shaggy. And he talked like this, he had an accent.
And then in the 80s, everybody like, wanted, all the partiers wanted their Scooby snacks.
Yeah, well, that's something different.
Serving up the Scooby snacks.
These aren't actually Scooby snacks. In fact, they're not even snacks, I don't think.
That's funny. Well, I think today was really cool. I think that you know, that it went well, and we're, you know, just feeling our way around this platform, and we really want to shout out to Clubhouse for its cool, easy to use and navigate platform.
Thank you to our caller, Susan, for putting in, sending text and adding input to it also, and anybody else who wants to send anything up. So it's easy to do. It's easy to log on to. It's free, and it's called, it's an app, and it's called Clubhouse. And if you want to access it, rbeatz, rbeatz.com is our site. And when we have shows, you get a little alert, and you can choose to participate or ignore it. Or you can just listen like our viewers are doing and also ignore it at the same time, which some of
and then if you want to catch this stuff archived, you can go to rbeatz.com, and we'll have the archived version under podcast.
Great. And we'll probably edit this to make it less crazy. Or no, you won't.
I kind of like the crazy guys. Yeah. I really enjoyed being a guest. Thank you so much for having me. Yes. This is Chelsea, by the way. But it was a lot of fun. I really liked it. And bring me back anytime. I mean, I don't know if my commentary was great, but I do enjoy it. That was a lot of fun.
I just want to ask one thing really quick before we go, Chelsea. And this is to you. Just give us a little insight on the restaurants that have the bots here that we were going to talk about going to. Because I think we might set up at the restaurant, and we'll do our podcast from the restaurant, and we're going to report live on a pepper bot or whatever it is, what kind of whatever bot they have in there.
Well, it's Wally and Eve.
And
so
we could do a different one occasionally so we can go around and kind of report to everybody what this is experience is like.
Instead of ChatGPT, they have ChatMSG.
Oh, well, there you go.
Or they have the iPal. The iPal thing that runs around. I don't know what they'll have. They'll probably have all different types of versions. I think it'll be fun to explore. Well, because it's here. We're in the realm. It's like wagon wheels to engines, no airplanes to airplanes, no TV to TV. I mean, we are living in a transition, and we're very fortunate to do it. And I think everybody was scared of those transitions and called them evil and the end of the world and all these crazy things when they were happening. And here we sit, and here we go. And we just got to be ready to launch and not be fearful and figure out how we can work with it so that it doesn't take us over. Chelsea, where are we going?
Okay, so I don't know how to pronounce it. Johnny Main, help me. It's Yiding or Y-I-D-I-N-G. Yiding Hot Pot. It's a Yeading? New restaurant. It's, huh?
Yiding?
I don't know. Anyway, it's Y-I-D-I-N-G. Hot Pot is a new restaurant in Pineville area. There is a robot wait staff. There's a pair of robots named Wally and Eve. And this shift to robot servers is a growing trend. They are Kenan dinner bots. And it's an AI-based pathway system which develops restaurant routines. I think it's fascinating. And I did look up, okay, because, you know, take me back in the day of the Jetsons. The first episode aired on September 20th.
Rosie.
Yes. We all need a Rosie.
It's kind of racist,
we do. But listen, yeah.
I want a Rosie that I can give a hug and feels nice, warm, and fuzzy.
Oh, so sweet and soft.
Rosie looked like a mailbox.
She did. Yeah. She had like a robe or a
she looks
mailbox.
Like the emoji
style.
That they have right. on the
she
on
did.
The emoji.
Yes. But listen, so the first episode aired on September 23rd of 1962. So this is almost 60 years later in the making. We are now having our own personal Rosies. That's a pepper.
You know what? That's when Lambda started, though. They started all the languages and stuff actually started in the 60s of AI bots.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And
it takes a while. The internet started in the 60s with the military, but we didn't hear about it until the 90s.
Right.
But then they came up with the Jetsons. I find that fascinating.
It is. So 1962.
They knew back then.
They still don't have flying cars.
They do have flying cars. I mean, they're hovering.
I actually know about that too, but they're not like they are like the Jetsons.
No. Well, and our houses are not in the sky yet, but maybe someday, maybe in another 60 years. I know that Elon Musk is looking at life on other planets. You just never know. I mean, we could be in 60 years living on Mars.
Do you think in 20 years we'll listen to this exact show
and laugh about it?
Yes. How ridiculous it
is? I definitely do.
Do you remember the Matt Lauer episode? Good Morning America, 1995, it wasn't that long ago, when he didn't know what the internet was, and nobody else did either. Nobody else did either, and they're asking, like, what is the internet? We have to ask our producer. We don't know what this is, and they're trying to explain what this is. They don't know the at symbol.
That's not Matt Lauer.
I'm sorry.
heard it said. I'd only seen the mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it.
Katie Couric. NBC.
Just what is this main artery of the information superhighway?
Every business, no matter how large, no matter how small, will be on the internet in the year 2000. It's the primary way that people will look up information. It will replace the yellow pages as we know it today.
Are a lot of people just getting on to the internet because they feel that they have to get onto the playing field, so to speak? But yeah. Very hip to be on the internet right now.
There it is. Violence at NBCGE.com. I mean,
not dot com. It was com.
What is internet anyway? What?
Internet is that massive computer network, the one that's becoming really big now.
Wow.
What do you mean? That's big. How does one? Not, what do you write to it like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
That's Katie Couric.
This is
asking.
So fascinating. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
1994 on the Today Show.
Oh, there's.
These are all people that you don't really know. I mean, everybody's signing on and having these conversations and
now they have the metaverse.
Together, whatever. To with people that I mean, I don't know if I.
It is group therapy of the
90s. As I mentioned, I have no desire to be a part of the internet because I feel like I'm so inundated with information all the time that I don't really. I don't want more.
Through Newswire.
Like it's just constant bombardment.
I don't know. I guess the thing I resent most is I would resent the, you know, at least when you're home, if the phone rings, you have the option of not answering it. On the internet, people can send you messages all the time, people you don't even want to hear from.
Constant. Wow. No, I mean, we literally to unplug is, it's actually scary to me now. Okay, well, that's a whole other topic.
But now,
we
got to
talk about that in some episode.
I know. Next week will be a good one. We'll bring on more bots. We'll introduce more bots to the program and at the rest and talk about the, and review the restaurant. We'll do a whole spread on the restaurant. We'll do and we'll put it on the rbeats.com. RBEATZ.com as well. And we'll go in every one of these restaurants that we go to and these places and we experiment with this, we'll review them for them for letting us come in there and do that.
Hopefully there'll be good reviews. It'll be interesting for sure. But I think I think it's so funny that 20 years from now, we might be that very video we just watched.
100%. And people are laughing going,
what are they talking about? Like, how do they not, why do they make it go into a restaurant about AI? This is ridiculous. Of course everybody uses this.
Yeah.
Servers. You mean people actually served you? Like what the heck? What's that all about?
We just haven't seen the concept in the flesh enough yet, you know? So. Yeah.
Well, that's what I meant with the unions. I think they protect the people. And that's what they were created to protect the work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so. And I think that, you know, maybe that's had... And also now, you know, after, you know, now fast forward from when they were created to what they are today, and maybe there's a little bit of a scary-ness that they might not, you know, well, they'll just have to, you know, have union bots or something, I don't know. But, you know, to where they don't have those dues coming in from the people, they're, you know, when you're dealing with a whole warehouse, well, they think, you know, because there are warehouse bots also, which we can get into another time. But they
Amazon,
have them,
yeah, go to Amazon.
Right, and they're firing people in 10,000 at a time droves.
So I want to end with this. You brought this up, firing people, because a lot of people, whenever new technology comes out, they understandably have a fear, and their fear is, What could all the jobs we're going to take? And that's been going on since the 1900s and the dishwashers came out. Dishwashers union went on strike because they said dishwashers are going to take away everybody's job. Who's going to wash dishes? A machine? That's ridiculous. It's nonstop. Internet did the same thing. Now AI is doing the same thing. Human beings will always find a way to find work from new technology. And I'll ask this. Would you rather have a job that pays $8 an hour or $2.13 an hour, which is the minimum wage for tipped employees, and rely on tips, basically people's generosity, to determine whether you live or not, survive or not? Or would you rather be able to be in a society where skills like AI, skills like fixing, learning technology, like what Johnny does, when those skills are valuable, necessary, and consistent? If you have AI in these kind of things in fast food restaurants and restaurants all the time, they're going to break. They're going to need upgrading. They're going to need updating. They're going to need repair, replacement. They're going to need all these things. And people are the ones who are going to do those things, right, at this point. And to me, those jobs, they pay significantly better. There is a skill set involved, and when you don't have a choice, when you're out of work because there is no such thing as servers anymore and you can't be a server, maybe you'll go back to school and you'll learn one of these kind of things.
It's kind of like the HVAC guy.
The HVAC guy?
Yeah, that comes in to fix your air conditioning. You know, you got to have a serviceman.
You got to have that. Yeah, you got to actually do it. Yeah, the HVAC
guy. But yeah. Here's the thing with a lot of the bots, the new technology, they're being able to beam to the satellites and repair themselves or figure out what their repair would need. But then you still have to have the serviceman to come out and fix it. Yeah, we're never going to be able to.
And build the satellites.
I think that it's going to build humans up or, you know, yes. It's going to build us up so we can also believe in ourselves that we can do something else and we can have a bigger, faster, more enterprise business because we don't have to do the mundane kind of stuff, you know, researching and things like that that take a long time.
And all the things that people say, I can't start my business because I'm not a good writer or I'm not a good reader or I'm not a good communicator. I don't have enough information. Well, now you have the internet, but now you also have AI too that can write you can write a business proposal. You can do any number of these things. So there's no more reason. My dad used to say in his generation, if you wanted to start a company, you had to open a factory. And in my generation, if you want to start a company, you open a laptop. Well, now you can take that step further and say someone else can be your brain and can write something better, more precise, more accurate, and maybe more updated than anything you could come up with on your own. And all you can do is tweak it to your specific product or service just a tiny bit and have that. Now there's no excuse for people who want to create compelling content like we're doing, who want to start a business or produce a service or do anything. There's no reason why they can't do it because it's fast, it's free, it's efficient, and it's everywhere.
And to your point, John, imagine, you know, and this was something that came up, I think, controversially, you know, through, you know, whatever. But, you know, there are a lot of people who can't afford an accountant. They can't afford an attorney. And those are fees that are real because if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. So, you know, something that jobs that are, you know, which they're already doing the attorney bots in Japan also because it's an open and closed book kind of thing. It's all based on research of facts. So if any job that you can learn facts off of, that's what a bot would take over that job. But eventually then that puts the average person that can't afford that wants to start a business in the playing field to own a business because they can go to the bot and they can get their taxes done. They might not be the best at math, but they're a badass in something else. Maybe they're not the best at organizing their, you know, what's lawfully correct in their business. But if they can, you know, get that information through bots and things like that, chatbots, whatever, information bots, I think that it allows people to grow a lot faster, a lot better.
How much time did you spend on your taxes? A lot. Even if you have an accountant, you're going to spend a lot of time getting with the accountant and going over that. Do you know Denmark, Sweden, Spain, and the United Kingdom have reverse tax system? It's called Ready Return. And basically, they estimate your taxes for you already and say, here's your tax bill. You can change or dispute it, or you can just pay it. And they use a artificial intelligence from that based on what goes into your bank account, what comes out of it, what your employer paid you, and so forth. So for most people in most situations, they can... An AI system automatically does all your taxes for you. How much time did you spend, even if you have an accountant, gathering up your paperwork, figuring things out, explaining to your accountant your unique special needs, and hoping that the accountant you have is good enough to know every tax break you're entitled to and is able to utilize it? And now imagine AI doing all that stuff for you, and you don't have to do anything.
My thing is, I would prefer to have a personal relationship with the AI bot that does my accountant. I wouldn't want to be putting like it's kind of like, you know, putting all the laundry from the whole city in one laundry and one washing machine and washing it, and you just get a little piece. You know, to me, if that's a real convenience to have the government do it for you, but I think on a personal level, it gives you a little more freedom to man your own bank account rather than have the government do it for you. So in those countries that do that, that's probably on a system that they have a very, they have a lot of ceilings on what they can and can't do, I would assume.
Americans on average spend 13 hours and $240 in filing fees.
Wow.
According to this article, LX.com. That's crazy. Mm. If there's circumstances like you and I are self-employed. I think that's a little different. But for most people who have regular W-2 jobs, this should not be a major thing. You should the government should be able to say, this is your stuff. And then, of course, you can always dispute it or change it. Mm-hmm. But it also prevent tax cheats. So your point about being able to man your own stuff, if you know what, this year I'm a little short on cash, I might just forget to add this extra thing here and there. Mm-hmm. The government's probably, if it wants something really big, the government's probably not going to catch it. And you times that by a million people who do that, there's millions and millions of dollars that are going out the window. If the government sends you a bill, my perception would be, unless you're just a total cheater, my perception is if the government sends you a bill that's right, if you thought about cheating, you're probably not going to go out of your way to contest that tax bill. And you're going to pay your taxes. So what I'm trying to say is this AI, if we used it in this country, for the most part, would pay for itself.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can always give people an opt-out. Opt out and do your own taxes if you want to spend 13 hours of our money. There you go. We solved the world's problem with AI.
Yeah.
Again.
I mean, it allows people to grow faster and better. So with that, I guess we can close out and thank everybody for listening and check out the archive. And Jess and Chels, we will have you guys, we'll be seeing you guys next week at the restaurant.
Love it.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you.
Very cool. Bon appetit.
Thank you for your time and listening to rbeats.com boutique streaming service, home of hashtag local music somewhere. Check back regularly for podcasts, artist interviews, and more.